Hi, everyone. I'm Tara Mott, and you're listening to the Trust and Thrive with Tara Mott podcast. I created this podcast along with my blog and brand to hopefully inspire others to live their most authentic life. I truly believe that we all have the power to live a life we love, and to do so, it's so important to be in tune with ourselves and be open to growing and evolving. I believe that once we can trust ourselves and our vision, that's when we can thrive. So with this podcast, I plan to discuss all things to do with self-reflection, personal growth, mindsets, and self-belief, all aspects that affect us in our everyday life. If you feel connected to my message and want to listen more often, I will be sharing one podcast a week, so make sure to subscribe and stay tuned. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to episode 52 of the show. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode with Alyssa Mancow. That was episode 51, Inner Child Healing and Reflecting on Our Childhood. That was a really great episode, and we touched on inner child work, inner child healing, and so much more. So make sure to check that one out after this episode if you haven't already. Today on the show, we have Philip J. Rowntree, who has a master's in social work, and he is a master's level clinician. Philip is a dynamic and engaging speaker who has been practicing professionally since 2005. He's recognized society's lack of emphasis placed on mental health awareness and total wellness, resulting in him evolving into a staunch advocate of wellness among various communities, particularly those underrepresented. He is the host of the You Good Man podcast, which is dedicated to discussing men's wellness across the areas of mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual wellness. I actually found Philip through his TEDx talk, Black Mental Health Matters, which had an amazing message, and he opened up so much about mental health, what he's been through, and why mental health awareness is so important to him. Philip's message of resilience is driven by his professional and personal experiences in the areas of social work, exercise science, and wellness. His vulnerability gives a face, voice, and hope to those who've yet to recognize their emotional and cognitive strength. He's the founder of Quantify LLC, a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing empowerment services to enhance the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual strength of an individual, team, and/or business. It was just so interesting to hear Philip talk about mental health because the truth is, you know, even we mentioned that it's very normal to see, you know, online and on Instagram, the focus of therapists and mental health topics are usually women who talk about these subjects, more commonly at least. And so for Philip to be sharing this important message and for Philip to be a voice for men and for the Black community, and it's really inspiring what he does. And I'm so excited for you to hear this episode. If you want to hear my favorite takeaways from what Philip had to say, then make sure to stick around until the end of the episode. I will share those after the interview. And I hope you're as inspired. I so admire Philip's authenticity, his vulnerability, and his strength and courage to be so open, because like we talk about in this interview, so often people think that it's weak to be vulnerable. You're weak if you cry or have emotions and all of that. But we discuss how courageous it is to be vulnerable, how terrifying it can be. But to be able to say, this may not be something we talk about in my community or in the environment I grew up in, but I am going to, that is bravery right there. That is courage. And so I really admire Philip, and I'm so thankful to him for sharing his story and for being so open. And I'm sure it will help so many other people. So I hope you enjoy this interview with Philip Rowntree. Hi, Philip. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Do you mind starting off telling us a little more about yourself and what you do?
That's always the awkward question. I don't know if you ever fully prepared to answer that question. It's like going on a job interview and talking about your, you know, your strengths and your areas of deficit. It's always hard, but I'll give it a try. So I am Philip Rowntree. Let's see. I am a master's level clinician, which means I have a master's in social work. I have a master's in exercise science. I am currently the founder and CEO of Quantify LLC, which is an organization geared towards providing services to enhance the physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional wellness of an individual. So under that umbrella, I do professional speaking, colleges, universities, workshops, professional developments on the areas of mental health, toxic masculinity, Black mental health. What else? I also do wellness coaching, so which is akin to therapy, but people prefer the term coaching that I've come across, just because of the stigma that therapy has. So I do mental wellness coaching. I sell merchandise. I do it all. I'm a full-time entrepreneur. So, you know, anything that I can do to promote wellness, and not just mental wellness, but, you know, all areas of wellness, because they're all important. So the idea of Quantify is that in order for us to not only live, but to thrive, all four areas, again, as physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional wellness, they all need to be working at optimal levels. If not, then, you know, our quality of life will suffer. So that's the spiel.
Thank you for sharing. And I know you talk a lot about mental health and wellness. And so what inspired you to focus on that? Is that something you dealt with or experienced? Well, I think everyone deals with that, but is mental health really important to you? Is that something that you focused on when you were a child and in your household?
Well, no, I think, you know, just this conversation that we're having on mental health now, in overall society, and then in particular in the African American community, it's relatively new. So for me personally, you know, as I said, I sell merchandise. The shirts that I sell are, this is what depression looks like, this is what anxiety looks like, and Black Healing Matters, and they really speak to what I experience. So I'm somebody who's diagnosed with depression and anxiety. I take medication every day, 75 milligrams of Effexor XR. That's extended release for those who not know. What else? I was suicidal literally for 15 years, from probably the age 17 to 32, 31, 32, 4 to 5 times a day, every day, you know, with really concrete suicidal plans, even though I did ultimately didn't go through with it. So just the topic of mental health is near and dear to my heart. As I said, I've been a social worker now for the last, graduated college in 05, so probably about the last 15 years. I've been working in some form or fashion within the social work profession. And so I've been a child and family therapist. And so just my experience within the social work profession and just seeing the untreated, undiagnosed individuals and working with that population and those who needed assistance, and then working with children and families who are misdiagnosed and overly pathologized within the mental health field. So it was just something that was just near and dear to my heart, not only my experience, but my professional experience. So it was just like, you know what, I need to, how can I be impactful and help others? And so I think we owe it to the world to tell our story, right? Because our story can be inspiring. And so that, coupled with, you know, my professional credentials have allowed me into spaces that have really allowed me to share and to aid others.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing. And as a male, especially a Black man, do you feel like in your community and growing up, you were able to talk about mental health in the same way as others maybe? Or do you think it was a taboo subject? How do you think that was for you?
So I think, you know, when we talk about just men in general and our level of vulnerability and being comfortable in expressing our emotions, it's just been taboo in society for forever. I'd probably say since the beginning of time, just because of how we've been conditioned growing up and for many of us growing up in under the guise of white supremacy and patriarchy and what have you, which influences how we view masculinity. And so, again, when we talk about, so when we go back to slavery and, you know, that group of people who were tasked with job completion, you know, the dumbing down of emotions was necessary in order to survive day to day, right? And that meant their family survival as well. So, you know, as human beings, just in general, our number one goal is to survive and make it day to day. Now, that can have some negative impact in by way of, we're talking about not only mental and emotional anguish, but we're talking about physical issues as well. So we know with men, in particular Black men, the number one cause of death is heart disease. So we're talking about heart attacks. We're talking about, you know, we can talk about strokes because that also plays a part, even though that's brain related. You know, a lot of that comes from stress. A lot of that comes from not having healthy outlets to express ourselves. So I don't necessarily know if it's, the Black community in general, but men in general, right? Just this idea of what it looks like to be a man. And, you know, we're familiar with what masculinity is supposed to look like, being strong, being able to be resilient, which is a great thing. But again, we talk about it at what expense. And so growing up, I've just adopted the norms of society. And so what that was is not being expressive especially with those who you're unfamiliar. I always reference a Budweiser commercial. I'm not sure how old you are, but it was a Budweiser commercial back in like the 90s. And it was a cowboy and he walks into a bar and, you know, I say, hey, how's it going? Like, hey, what's up? And it's like, oh, and he goes into this whole spiel about what's going on with him. And people are looking at him like, yo, what's your problem? Right. Because, again, we're conditioned not to really inquire about what's happening with the individual. Right. We want to keep everything surfacey, because if we do have to deal it and hear and listen to other people and what they're experiencing, For some, it's just like, you know what, that's a downer. And so, again, that's how we've been conditioned. So I don't think it's really, I think the idea that is of the Black community and this, the lack of conversation is blown out of proportion, comparatively speaking to other race and ethnicities, just because we found alternative ways to cope. So that's why you see a lot of people, especially the Christian faith is big in the Black community. And we know with Christianity and just religions in general, we give our troubles, we give our emotions, we're vulnerable in our spiritual walk. And so I think we've just found various ways to channel those emotions. And, you know, has it been helpful? I guess it's an individual case by case basis.
Mm-hmm. And what does your self-exploration journey look like? When did you realize that this isn't okay and I want to redefine what it means to be a man and what masculinity really is? When did you experience that in your own life?
Well, I think for me, I've always known that I was quote unquote different, right? It is wild when we say, when I have to say different, when we talk about just, I'm a feeler. Like I've always been that way. I've always been emotional, or as others might've deemed it, I've always been soft. Right. And so that's been me for the longest time. It just took me a while to truly embrace it, because, again, nobody wants to stand out. Right. Nobody wants to be the subject of some type of ridicule amongst your peers for being an individual who is vulnerable. And how we come to this moment of clarity is just through experience. And so for me, just maturing and growing and learning more about me. So we're talking about through the teenage years, through my 20s, which, you know, we're really exploring and just trying to figure out our role in this world. And I knew truisms for me was I was tired of feeling suicidal, right? I was tired of feeling depressed for multiple days on end. I still have my bouts of depression, my bouts of anxiety. I have the coping skills now to deal with a little bit better. But I would say for me, it just got to the point probably in my early 30s where it was just like, you know what, I need to be the healthiest me that I can be. And so with that looked like me taking starting medication. That looked like me going to therapy consistently. I tried therapy in my 20s, but I threw the baby out with the bathwater. So they say with mental health, statistically speaking, it takes 10 years for somebody to get their mental health under control. And that really was the length of time roughly for me, from really when I started the process at 22, going to my first therapist, until 32, when I really started taking medication and really just started understanding myself and taking myself more serious and what I was experiencing more serious.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, the whole idea of taking care of yourself, because, the very stereotypical traditional role of men has always been, they work and they don't deal with their emotions, and you're weak if you need therapy, you're weak if you want to talk about your emotions, which is so ridiculous because I think being vulnerable and being open about that shows so much courage and strength. If anything, it's the exact opposite. So, in your life, do you think you've had people who've been supportive of that, who understand it, or was this very new to those around you?
No, I think, I mean, when we talk about mental health and our support system, for me, it was the women in my life, right? When we have this idea of masculinity, even though I don't even believe in those terms, because ultimately we're talking about attributes to being a healthy human being, right? When we say masculinity and femininity, there needs to be a balance, that we need it all, right? So I just hate those terms because, again, it puts people in a box, but I understand why they're there. And so for me, it was, my women friends who I really leaned on during various times that may have been difficult. So me being suicidal at one point, I remember vividly calling my friend Dr. Akbar, who's a professor here in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, where I'm at, and talking to her and her calming me down, and vice versa, situations where she might have been really reeling emotionally. And so again, but this is something that was honed over the years just through our level of vulnerability, because again, it's much more comfortable in having a conversation with women as opposed to with men. Now to where I am, I am able to have conversations with men about wellness. So, I run a men's group here in Philly, and it's an opportunity for men to really come out and emote and be vulnerable. So, but I think earlier on, I really leaned on the women in my life to who were my support systems.
And so, what advice would you give to a man who maybe has not explored mental wellness and health and they don't really know how to approach it? So, if someone were to approach them and want to express their feelings or just talk to them about an issue they're going through and they don't really know how to respond, what advice would you give to someone on the receiving end who doesn't really know how to deal with that?
I think when we talk about just advice for somebody, it's just the idea of just active listening, right? That's that, because a lot of times when we talk about mental health and therapy in particular, we're going to a therapist. Yes, we want the clinical expertise, but for so many, it's just to have somebody listen to us, right? So that just gives us the opportunity to emote, the opportunity to be vulnerable without judgment. Sometimes we don't need somebody to respond verbally, but we just want to be heard. So I think that's key. Just make sure we're listening and be slow to respond. Another thing is just to have empathy, right? Because, and remember that it's difficult for somebody to talk about what they're feeling, what they're experiencing, due to fear of judgment or what have you. So just having that idea of empathy and how would I feel if I were in their shoes, and offering them grace and recognizing how difficult it is for them. And then being open and honest, right? It's if you're not comfortable in being on the receiving end of a conversation like that, let the person know, right? Let them know, because we shouldn't feel uncomfortable in trying to help somebody else out, right? Especially if we're not secure in where we are with our own mental health. So it's important. It's not everybody's responsibility to listen to what's happening. In a perfect world, it would be, right? But there are certain situations and certain discussions that I don't participate in, right? If somebody asks me a question about, so let's say, sexual abuse, right? I'm uncomfortable having a conversation with somebody about sexual abuse. And so I'll fight really hard to try and be present and remember. But it's some for me, sometimes it's difficult just to navigate those types of difficult conversations. And so if I can't do it, I don't want to lead the person on and having them thinking that I can, right? So that's just having knowledge of self, that level of self-awareness, when we are interacting and having conversations about mental health and our experiences.
Yeah, and I asked that because, like you said, I think listening is so important. And often, I don't want to say just men either, because many women do this too, but we feel like when we're on the receiving end, we need to fix it, or we have to help the person solve their issue, or we have to fix it in some way, when just listening and being there can be the best thing. And if anything, if we don't know how to solve it or we don't know what to say, just being honest about that and saying, I can't relate to what you're going through, but I'm here and I hear you. And a lot of people, I think, try to compare right away their experiences and say, oh, I know exactly what you're going through, or I had it worse, or kind of do that thinking that it'll make the other person feel better, when in reality, it almost makes you feel more alone because maybe they don't really know what you've been through, if that makes sense. Would you agree?
No, I completely agree. No different than, how I feel about religion. And, yes, somebody might identify as being Christian, but there's a million different Christians, right? Because we're all individuals. We all have our own perspectives and our own life experiences which influence how we see the world, right? So yes, we might have similar experiences, but how they influence and impact us can be completely different. And even if they are similar, right, they're still different because we're all unique individuals. And so that's something to be mindful of. I'm a full fan of I'm definitely a fan of self-disclosure, especially when somebody's talking about something they're going through. But we never want to get into that idea of compare. I call it the trauma Olympics, right? Where we're comparing the traumas that we've had with the person who might be going through something. And just remember, keep that individual in the forefront and their experiences. And if you can pull from your own, then that's a beautiful thing. But to remember to keep that individual and what they're experiencing in the forefront.
I think that's so important to just focus on that person. It's so easy to make it about you and in that moment, especially. And to be honest, too, if something's triggering for you and you don't want to talk about it, to make that clear, because, like you said, it's not necessarily your responsibility to need to hear people, So I appreciate you bringing that up. So, overall, with Quantify, can you go a little more into detail on how that came about? How did you start that, and what inspired you exactly to create it?
So Quantify was started, this was 2016, September of 2016. So probably about, well, a few years prior to that, I went back to school, got a master's in exercise science because I was burned out from the field of social work. So, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go to the NFL, I'm gonna be a strength and conditioning coach. So I went and got this degree. And, so I got the degree. I didn't have any experience. So I started emailing various colleges and universities. And so one of the schools that contacted me back was Villanova University. And so they brought me in, and it was just like a match made in heaven. It was just like, I call them my white doppelgangers. Like they were white, but they had beards. They were all big and strong, the strength and conditioning team. And so it was a match made in heaven. And so they brought me back again. They were like, yeah, we want you to start in the spring. Well, I guess it would be the late summer, or early summer rather. So they wanted me to start May of 2016. And so I was excited to start working there as a strength and conditioning coach. But 5 months prior to a young man here in Philadelphia by the name of Emmanuel Sloan, he was 19. He died by suicide jumping in front of a train. And so when I saw that in the paper, I was laying in bed scrolling, and I saw it on our newspaper's website. And for me, it was just like, you know, it's time for me to really get out here and have this conversation. Yes, I've worked as a therapist and in child welfare, I worked as a hospital social worker, and I've had the opportunity to talk about what I've experienced, you know, on a not as in-depth as I would like at the time, but I knew it was time for me to really get out here, because not too many people that look like me really talk about their mental health experiences. So when I look like me, I'm talking about I'm not the suit and tie person, right? I you know, I have multiple degrees, so I'm a professional person. I look like a common person walking down the street. And so when we have this idea of what mental health looks like, it's usually the extremes, right? It's usually somebody who's experiencing some type of psychosis, like a homeless person, or, you know, Kanye, unfortunately, who has some what we call schizoaffective traits, which might be influencing his new religious pursuits. But again, it's not somebody who's still achieving or the common everyday person. And so once I got out here and I started talking about what was happening with me and what I've seen, what I've experienced, it was received well. And so it was just like, you know what, I have to do this. So the day before I was supposed to start working at Villanova, it's probably a bad etiquette, but I emailed them and I said, I can't do this because I know what I'm supposed to be doing. So we have this idea of, you know, finding our purpose and, you know, we're supposed to know at 17 and 18 when we go to college and definitely what you graduate with. Well, I figured out my purpose at 32. And so with that, I just hit the ground running. I started going to professional conferences and telling my story. And that turned into paid speaking engagements at, you know, places like University of North Carolina, University of Wisconsin, Providence College, just various places who really wanted to hear me talk about various aspects of mental health. So we're talking about athletes and mental health, Black mental health, freshman students and mental health, and just this conversation of the importance of taking care of ourselves. And so just with that, it's just expanded to now including coaching and selling merchandise. So just again, it's just all a result of me finally gaining the level of self-awareness and gaining the level of self-confidence that allows me to truly offer people permission to feel, right? I don't call myself a motivational speaker. Like, oh, people see my TED talk, like, oh, that was motivational. You know, I was like, well, no, I'm not trying to be motivational. I'm trying to just offer people permission to feel, because sometimes we just need to hear somebody say, yo, it's okay for you to feel the way that you're feeling. And it could be a weight lifted off of our shoulders. So, you know, that's been the origin of Quadify, and hopefully in the future it just continues to expand.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And the fact that you wanted to be that example, and you mentioned that, you know, mental health doesn't always look, we represent mental health in a different way than it really is. So do you think growing up for you, you had representation of what mental health is and people in your life talked about it enough, or was it something that you felt like you couldn't really discuss?
Well, no, it wasn't. I mean, when we talk about, again, mental health in general, it just wasn't a conversation that took place. When we talk about depression and anxiety, it wasn't something we talked about in school. We might have heard it in music, but, you know, that was fleeting. We still didn't fully comprehend what somebody like Kurt Cobain or Biggie or various people were talking about in their music when they were talking. You know, Biggie has a song, Suicidal Thoughts. And so hearing that in 1995 at, I guess I was 12 at that time, that doesn't resonate. I don't know what he's talking about. I just hear him rapping these things. It wouldn't be until some years later, almost 15 years later, that I understand, well, you know what? He was talking about the thoughts that he was having about ending his own life. And so, it just wasn't a national conversation. And so if it's not a national conversation, it's definitely not going to be a local and community conversation. The emphasis that we're having now is that we're putting on it is a great thing. I think it's still kind of surfacey, right? Especially when we talk about social media and what have you. And it's just like, go to therapy. We just throw that up there in a meme and gets likes and what have you. But that really doesn't go into the depth of what mental wellness truly looks like. But I think we're well on our way to making some headway. As far as in my community, I think we've been a victim of the whitewashing of mental health that I often talk about, where, you know, if we're getting this information from the media or, you know, print or just various things or research, that we aren't the, you know, my community hasn't been researched, right? It hasn't. I'm reminded by an article in the Washington Post about statistics that said suicide across the board amongst children and adolescents. So this was children. So this was children goes up to about age 12. So under age 12 was declining across the board, except within the African American community, where an increase between 500 and 700%, right? And so in the article, they talked to, I believe he was a psychologist, and they asked him, why was that so? And he said, well, it's not enough data. And so it was just like, well, it's not enough data. This is the problem, right? They're not talking with individuals within the community who are experiencing these things. So they can say it's no data. But if they talk to me, I can easily go to talk about the failing education system. I could talk about white supremacy. I can talk about patriarchy. I can talk about employment. I can talk about various ideals that are influencing Black mental health. But again, we won't know this until we really start getting deep into really what mental health is and how it's affecting all communities. And I'm applying to doctoral programs right now, and I'm seeing a lot of programs that are looking specifically for individuals who are doing research within the Latinx community, right? Especially mental health. And so they're where we were some years ago, right? Where there's not any data. And so now there are people who are looking to do research in that area will get preferential treatment because the data just doesn't exist, right? So again, I think there's progress that's been made, but I think we definitely have so far to go.
Definitely. I think you're so right about saying that it's such a new topic still, or it's something that we're not used to talking about, like even in the 90s and before that. And so how important do you believe it is to have classes like for kids in middle school, high school, even maybe younger, about mental health and dealing with these issues? Because especially in those times, like you said, at the age of 17, we're like forced to figure out what we're going to do for the rest of our lives. And it's so like no one really knows at that point. We haven't experienced life, and then that puts pressure on people. And so going to college and starting that kind of chapter of your life can be very confusing. So do you think it's really important to have like mental health classes in schools?
Oh yeah, no, for sure. Because we're talking about coping, we learn how to, we first we learn how to cope from what we see, right? So for me, I wasn't a, I've never been in a fight in my life, but I know how to curse somebody out with the best of them, right? Because cursing is what I heard. And so we learn how, you know, we learn how to cope. So if we can, if we can have these discussions and workshops in age appropriate ways from the earlier age, the better, right? Because a kid who's in first grade who might get picked on or might get teased or might get laughed at, they're going to cope in a way that they know, right? And so it could either be, you know, they can lash out with aggression, they can isolate themselves, they can, they can respond in a myriad of ways, but that's their mental health, right? And that's shaping how they're going to move forward in this world. And so the earlier, the better. If we can teach a child how to, instead of being acting out and frustrated and throwing a desk, you know what, some controlled breathing techniques, meaning inhaling and exhaling, right? Or it might be, you know what, ask to take a time out just to go collect yourself. Or if somebody says something, how to advocate for yourself and tell a teacher, right? These are all strategies we don't look at it as being related to our mental health, but it is, right? Because we're looking for support. We're looking for ways to deal with what we're feeling. Kids feel from the womb, right? So it's only right that the earlier, the better. When we talk about mental health, you know, we talk about it in schooling context, but our mental health is impacted as soon as we come out the womb. When we're crying because we need our basic needs met. And so we know that attachment disorders start from that early age, right? From being a newborn, when you're crying, and if nobody comes to get you, that impacts your brain chemistry. That impacts how it could be, you know, for the foreseeable future, right? Just because you didn't get somebody to pick you up because you were crying, that can mm-hmm. impact you going forward. Because again, we're talking about the nurturing aspect. That's our mental health. So if we're really going to have this conversation, it needs to start, you know, in definitely in utero. If you know, when we talk about me working in child welfare and seeing children born drug addicted, right? And that impacts their mental health. And so, you know, this is a conversation that we can hit from various aspects in various ways, because again, it's necessary, but we're all, our mental wellness is always being tested, right? We think 90,000 thoughts per day. A lot of them are just the same thoughts we just have every day, some conscious, some unconscious, right? When we're driving, we're still thinking, even though it's, we might be doing it unconsciously because we know the motor patterns or what have you. But 60,000 of roughly 50 to 60,000 of those thoughts are negative, right? So if we're constantly thinking from a negative space, from a place of deficit, then it's imperative that we have ways to deal and to cope.
Mm-hmm. And especially say for like a boy in high school, or they're surrounded by other boys who don't really know how to deal with their emotions. And say, for example, they're in the locker room and they're calling someone a wussy for opening up. How does one approach that? It's obviously a hard question because in that moment, you're at that age, it's hard to deal with. But I think, like, what do you believe about the chain reaction of one person speaking up and saying, hey, that's not cool, or don't use that kind of language?
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. It's, you know, we don't want to be bystanders, right? We want to really engage in situations, because that could be the difference of some, literally life or death for some kids. I know a friend of mine, at her daughter's school, a child died by suicide in the seventh grade within the last 2 weeks. And so due to bullying. So the more we can have people to intercede in these situations, just say and just step up and say, yo, that's not cool. Yo, you're acting corny. You know, that's what we say over here. Like, stop acting corny. Right? It's just like, no, if we can have somebody to interject in these situations, ideally it'd be in another kid, right? And somebody in that peer group, because at that age, we're so worried of, and focused on peer acceptance, because that means more to your peer saying, yo, relax. Don't, why you say that to him means a lot more than your principal saying it, right? Or another adult male saying it, just because of what's happening during that stage of life. So yeah, so it's definitely important for us to be true allies. But it's difficult, right? It's difficult because that means we have to be uncomfortable. And so for another 14-year-old to say that means he's extremely comfortable. And we know that, again, how difficult it is and what that looks like, but it's definitely possible and definitely something that we should talk about more about the importance of being an ally in situations like that.
And I gave an example of like a young boy or someone in school, but it is very unfortunate that it does happen now. There are adults who still have that same mindset, or that's what they learned growing up. So, but overall, how important do you believe it is to listen? I know we talked about listening, but to leave an open space for different communities, whether that is different minority groups or whoever it is, to be open. Because, like you said, mental health especially doesn't look one way. So, how important do you believe it is to have that open space?
Yeah, no, I think it's very critical. I also, think that it's important to, I know you started the question off with this, is to truly find your tribe, right? I think that's a lot of what we do in this world. We try to find people with whom we can click with, who we get along with, right? Who we have the same thought process as. The downside of that is it's change and growth rarely happens in those situations. You need people with different mindsets, different perspectives in order to help challenge you and your outlook. I know for me personally, within the last few months, I've been really focused on the not only the LGBTQ plus community, but the trans persons community as a whole. I was watching Pose and it was just like, yo, I really like this show, right? Like, I found myself, even though I'm open and could talk about anything, I'm not telling people I'm watching Pose, right? Because of what the backlash might be. And I'm like, no, this is a great show that's based on the trans experience back in the late 80s and early 90s. And so with that, I was just like, you know, I've started having conversations with just various people till it got to the point where it was just like, you know what? I have this men's group every other week. I want to bring in, well, I want to show a video, an interview about the trans persons community, trans women in particular, because I know with a lot of men that the idea of we'll be more accepting of a trans man as opposed to a trans woman, right? And so, and we know that a lot of trans women's death comes by hands of men. And so I just wanted to have that open dialogue to really bring the not only their issues to light, but just so we can see the intersectionality that exists with when we talk about Black trans women and their rates of death compared to their white counterparts and the perpetrators of it. And so how they're navigating being not only trans woman, but also Black and just the various aspects. Again, just to have conversation and to have people think. And so to my surprise, I had about 20 people show up and we had this conversation and everybody wasn't in agreement with pronouns, right? And it was just like, you know what, we're going to have this conversation. Because it's important that we talk and engage with people who have differing perspectives so we could potentially learn. So and again, we have to come in with an open mindset with situations, like that. When I talk about not wanting to use pronouns, the individuals who are like, nah, I'm not using it. And we're just like, I understand, right? I completely understand. I've been alive for me personally, 35 years. And so within the last year or two, you're saying, all right, everything that I've known for those 33 years, now you're telling me to change. And we know how difficult change is. So that's why I say it's important that we show people that we show people grace, right? Who have differing perspectives, except when their beliefs, you know, infringe on my ability to live, right? And my mm-hmm. ability to survive. And that's when it's, you know, the idea of grace gets thrown out the window. You know, James Baldwin said, we can disagree and still love each other unless your disagreement is rooted in my oppression and the denial of my humanity and right to exist. And so, again, we can, you know, it's so critical that we have open minds. We can agree to disagree unless, again, we're talking about life or death and it's really infringing upon my life. But no, it's uber important because, again, we're, despite our differences, right, despite the various differences that exist there, we still have some commonalities, and our desire to live wholehearted lives and live mentally well is one thing that we all have in common.
Mm-hmm. And that's incredible that you were so open to having that discussion. And it's hard to touch on topics that we're not familiar with or we're not used to, but it's really important to do that. And so have you noticed that maybe you being more vulnerable or being open to new subjects, have you noticed that that's maybe inspired those around you to do the same?
Yeah. I mean, I've, you know, what, you know, even though that's like a secondary, a secondary achievement from it. Cause first and foremost, it's about me and in my life and me being able to live a healthy, wholehearted, productive life. So with that, a byproduct is encouraging and inspiring others to seek out what their truth is for themselves. So I definitely have noticed it amongst just the people that I come in contact with, whether I go speak and be open, honest, and vulnerable. Where I was, you know, at the coffee shop that I frequent, and I was leaving out today, and a woman, I didn't remember her, right? But she, because I meet so many people, you know, she was like, oh, she was like, hey, she was like, you know, I signed up for a cancer walk. And she was like, you know, I'm going to do it. It's like, you inspire me from our conversation that we had. Remember, I had the cane last time and I don't have it now, but I'm going to do it just, you know, so I could stay active. And I was like, I didn't remember the conversation. Right. But clearly she did. And she took something from it. So if I'm able to help somebody in that way, then that's a beautiful thing.
And I'm glad you mentioned living your truth, because overall, this show is about living your most authentic life. And I like asking guests this question because everyone has such a different answer. So I wanted to ask you, what does living your most authentic life mean to you?
For me, it's, that's interesting. So, and I don't know if this answers the question, but so often people ask me, or I see other people ask other people, are you happy? And I always say, my goal isn't to be happy in life. And they're like, wait, what? You don't want to be happy? And it's like, I'm not saying I don't want to be happy, but that's not what I'm striving for. I'm striving to be able to be able to experience every emotion fully, right? So that's happiness, that's sadness, that's anger, that's frustration, that's joy. I want to be able to experience every emotion. And that's for me what a healthy, wholehearted life looks like. I want to be able to cope with them all, right? Because if I don't know how to handle anger, then I'm not going to know how to handle being happy, and conversely with sadness and with joy. So if I have an understanding of how to appreciate every emotion that I experience, then that's what, you know, living a fulfilled life looks like for me. And then again, once that's the basis of it, now when we start talking about various goals and what have you, then we can, you know, start adding those in. But at a basic level, I just want to be able to experience every emotion and appreciate them for what they are and be able to cope with them in healthy ways.
Mm-hmm. That's so beautiful. And I think not many people realize that, like the beauty and pain and suffering and what that can bring for you. And, you know, it's so important to experience those emotions. Obviously, to a certain extent, it can be harmful and we need people around us to help us. But overall, touching on these emotions and not suppressing them is so important. And so What advice would you give to someone who may not know how to deal with their emotions, whether it is a man or a woman who is not used to, you know, they've never been to therapy or they feel like they don't have that support in their life? What advice would you give to them?
Google, like literally Google, right? You can Google how to deal with my anger, how to deal with my sadness, how to deal with my happiness. Google is an amazing thing. Now, putting into practice is something completely different. And that's when you gotta have trust in yourself first and foremost. And that's difficult, especially when you grow up in a society that tells you to put others first, right? And worry about yourself last. And it's just like, no, I always say, yeah, I have kids, but they don't come before me, right? Nobody comes before me, because if I'm not right, nobody else will be. And so, you know, again, first and foremost, figure out, you know, again, how to deal. And if you don't know, it's okay. Allowing yourself that room to improve. I always say, right, life is hard. We just make it look easy. Right. And so with that, we have to show ourselves grace. We're doing the best that we can with the skills that we have. Right. But if we want to, again, continue to make incremental improvements and so we can even live more fulfilled, then that means figuring out healthy coping skills. Again, you can Google healthy coping strategies. That means taking time for self and you know, even though it's cliche, self-care, right? We're talking about self-care is going to therapy. It's not just drinking some wine or, you know, taking a bubble bath. It's relaxing. It's reading. It's starting a new hobby. It's going to the gym. It's sitting peacefully. It's walking your dog without your phone and just becoming one with the environment. These are just various ways that you really could become in tune with self. And again, recognize that it's not easy, right? Like I've lived with depression and anxiety for a long, long time. And so I know that it's not going to be gone in a year. This is something, you know, the low self-esteem, even though I go to, that's why I was late. I was at the gym. You know, even though I go to the gym and, you know, I'm in great shape, I still exhibit low self-esteem from my days when I was severely overweight. Again, something I'm going to deal with for the rest of my life. Right. And all I can do is hope that I've acquired the tools necessary to be able to cope with that, with those feelings when they arise, right? So when that 16-year-old 300-pound Phil shows up, it's to show him love and affection and attention and say, yo, it's okay to feel this way, right? Giving myself permission. Yo, it's okay to be upset. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to experience, no matter what your significant other says, no matter what society says, no matter what your friends say. It's okay to feel whatever it is that you're feeling. And now we got to work on having the skills to be better, because we deserve it.
Mm-hmm. And it's so true. I read somewhere that therapy is like your mental gym. And I think so many people have that image of, you know, like you said, mental health looks so different for everyone. And people think, oh, you have to like be on the streets or have like a really serious problem to go to therapy. When if anything, I personally think everyone should go. It's literally like going to the gym for your mind and your emotions, and it's so important. So in your TED talk, your TEDx talk, you talked about going from living to thriving. And I think that kind of relates to this idea of, you know, being your best self. So what does that mean to you, living to thriving?
Yeah. So for me, it's just a matter of, you know, making sure first and foremost, my wellness quad. So that's the quad and quadify, my physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual self, is they're all working at optimal levels. So for physical, we're talking about not only going to the gym, but we're talking about trying to eat in a way, eat in a nutritionally healthy way. We're talking about drinking enough water. We're talking about getting enough sleep, right? A lot of us are under sleeping because we got to, we got to keep up with everybody else, so we got to grind, you know. It's, I always say the grind doesn't love you, right? So when we're out here grinding and your body shuts down, whether it's your place of employment, it's going to be somebody there that they'll bring right in, right after you, if something happened to you. When we talk about mentally thriving, that's, for me, it's playing Sudoku, right? I never played Sudoku a day of my life. I started a year ago, maybe. But again, we're talking about keeping our mental faculties sharp. We're talking about reading books. We're talking about challenging ourselves with different hobbies that might be hard. Because again, we want to keep your brain working. We don't want to just continue to coast in our day to day. When we talk about, again, emotional, thriving emotionally, it's going to therapy. It's allowing myself to be vulnerable and to be open. It's receiving love, allowing myself to receive love and to give love, to be able to allow myself to get angry, right? Or to be sad or to be happy. And just the spiritual aspect of thriving for me is just the idea of walking in my truth, walking in my purpose, and which is helping others, because that gives me a sense of gratification. And so we can get that from tapping into to our inner selves. How do we do that? We can meditate. We can walk, like literally walking and just really connecting with the trees and what have you. I started running like a year ago. I was one of those people like saying running is stupid. Running is dumb. It makes no sense until I started running. And so once I started running, it was just like I started seeing the trees in a different way. I'm interacting with the ground and with the grass, and I'm seeing it just in a different way. And I'm just looking about, you just get to see the beauty in life, right? We see the beauty in the architecture, and just that this came from somebody else's mind, right? And so when we start looking at things, we take a step back and we stop trying to rush our lives and rush our days, and we just able to sit back and reflect. You know, we'll recognize our spiritual self again. And for some people, it might be going to church or what have you. That's cool if that floats your boat. But just whatever brings you a higher sense of self, right? So, you know, and that all that coupled together for me is what thriving looks like. It's not just for me. It's just not going day to day to a job. I don't knock anybody who does that, right? But I know for me and where I am in my life, I can't ever have a 9-to-5 again. A traditional 9-to-5. I haven't had one now going on. It's about my 8th year. I haven't had a traditional 9-to-5. And so for me, again, walking in my truth. And so, yeah, that's what thriving looks like.
I love that. And I appreciate you mentioning that because it's so easy to autopilot through life. And, you know, like you said, everyone's different. For some people, they thrive in that 9-to-5, or they thrive going to church, or they thrive in their own ways. And then it looks different for everyone. So I'm glad you mentioned that. And so lastly, I just want to go back and touch on the idea of masculinity again, if you don't mind. I know we talked about that, and I want to ask you, like, after all everything you've experienced in your life, and you know, you're still so young and there's so much to experience, but if you could redefine masculinity in your own words of what you really believe it means to be masculine and to be a good man, I know you talk a lot about that. How would you define that?
Well, first, as I said earlier, masculinity and femininity is bullshit. The reason why, you know, I use that language, first and foremost, again, the older you get, the more you realize just how we've been conditioned, right? So even if we talk about foul language, right? Who was to say, why couldn't orange be a curse word, right? And so we just think about these things, and it's just this shift that we're having about how we think, which goes to the idea of masculinity. Masculinity is often attributed to these ideals about men, right? But women can have masculine, quote unquote, masculine characteristics. Conversely, mm-hmm. men can have feminine characteristics. But what we're talking about, and why I call it BS, is, again, we're talking about what does it look like to be a healthy human being, right? That's what we're talking about at its core. And so It's so necessary that we shift from these ideals. And if we could just look at, what does it mean to be healthy human, a healthy person? And so what's that? So we're talking about being able to emote, being able to be vulnerable. That also means caring about our physical strength, right? Because even though it is associated with masculinity, our physical strength impacts us, men or woman, as we age, right? It helps preserve the bone mass that we start to lose after the age of 30. And so, so if we really just merge and take some of these ideas from these categories and really just put them into what does it mean to be a human being, we wouldn't even have to say what's masculine, what's not, what isn't masculine. For those who hold on to those ideals, again, it's safer, right? It's safer because if I've known something to be this way for so long, it's change is going to be difficult and it's change is scary. So again, when we talk about the idea of masculinity, we're talking about what does it mean to be the healthiest you possible?
Yes, I love that. And I'm so glad you said that because it's so easy to be conditioned. And so that if we have masculine traits or feminine traits, you know, like what we're taught growing up, then we think there's something wrong with us when in reality, we're just all human and we're all a mix of everything. So I'm so glad you said that. I wanted to ask you what's coming up next for you and your work and where can listeners give you a follow?
So for me, I have a few speaking engagements lined up on the East Coast. I know they're private events, but for me, really, it's nothing is coming up. I'm really focusing in on, and this goes into the idea of our wellness. I deleted my socials today. I deleted my Instagram. Now you can feel free to follow me still because I may still once a week go on and just post something or, you know, check my messages because I know people do DM me. So my Instagram is Phil, PHIL underscore quantified. That's Q as in quail, UAD as in dog, EFY. Also on Twitter, but I don't check Twitter because Twitter triggers my anxiety. So I have an account, I just don't use it. But that comes into knowing and learning yourself. I realize I can't keep up with the Joneses, right? I can't have the snaps and the Twitters and all of those things. I'm good with the ancient Facebook and I'm good with Instagram, which I took off my phone today because I have about 6 weeks before my applications for doctoral programs are due. And I have to focus on the GRE. I have to focus on doing this research and my personal statement, as well as my business, as well as being a father. So I realized that I can't be a part of everything. I need to isolate myself and bunker down, especially when we're talking about achieving goals, right? And so anything that can ultimately distract from our goals, which for so many of us is social media, because then I'll find myself on there comparing myself to others. And, you know, I'll keep it real. Like I see people on there and they might post an event that they're doing and I get frustrated, right? So it's like, I don't need that energy right now because again, I'm a human being, I feel, and I'm not going to sit here and lie and say I don't get jealous. I think jealousy is healthy in small, super small doses, right? Because it can keep you honest and keep you focused on what it is that you need to be accomplishing. So I say all that to say you can reach me on Instagram. But, you know, for the next few months, I'm definitely going to be laying low. I'll still have my podcast, which is the You Good Man podcast, which is on Google Play Music. I got to shout out my Android people first and foremost. So Google Play Music, it's on SoundCloud and it's on Apple Music. But I check out my website and you can buy merch off my website on the shop tab. I have some great merchandise, or so I've been told. If you're interested in not only mental and emotional wellness coaching, I also offer physique coaching, which is just general physical wellness, as well as coaching athletes, because I owe $107,000 in student loans. So I got to use both my degrees and both my master's degrees in some form or fashion. But yeah, so, you know, those are ways definitely to reach out. If you want to send me a message on my website, it's www.quadify, QUADEFYLLC.net. You could send me a note if you got a question. I try to pride myself on responding to everybody, because again, I know how it is, right? I know how it is when you just need to be heard. And so that's the least I can do is to try and respond, right? Because it doesn't take me much to say, hey, what's up? What's going on? Oh, thank you for the kind words, or here are some resources for you. So definitely don't hesitate to reach out.
Well, thank you so much, Philip. I really do admire your self-awareness. I think that's so important, and your honesty with everything you're sharing. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
So I hope you enjoyed that interview with Philip Rowntree. I was specifically really touched with how open and honest he was in sharing his story, how self-aware he is, and that takes a lot of time. It's not easy to be self-aware and to really understand yourself, and that looks different for everyone, but I can tell that Philip has really worked through that, and he even explains that it was a journey for him. He's very honest and open about dealing with depression and thoughts of suicide and everything that he had been through. And it just inspires me because there's so many people that can hear this and think, okay, he was able to feel this way for 15 plus years and he made it through, and now he's having such a positive impact and helping other people. He reminds people that they're not alone, that you can get through this. Sometimes it feels like the end of the world. It feels like this feeling is never ending, but it is. I was really interested in hearing his thoughts on what he thinks it means to be a man and redefining masculinity, and how it's so easy in certain cultures and just in society in general to find unhealthy and alternative ways to cope with your feelings. Generationally or culturally, if we're raised to be taught that you're a wussy for being a boy who speaks his mind or who shares his emotions or keep your feelings in, don't cry, it's toxic. At the end of the day, I think addiction and so many things, there's a lot of biology that goes into that too, but a lot of it has to do with real feelings, what we're dealing with. We find alternative ways to cope when we don't know how to deal with trauma, with pain, with hardship. And it's so important that we raise children, that we teach those around us that it's okay. If anything, it's so important. It's vital to learn how to express your emotions and to understand how you feel, to be able to cope with that in a healthy way, to write, to communicate, to express, to understand what you're feeling, and not just jump into finding ways to distract yourself. A lot of people do that with materialistic items, with food, with drugs, with alcohol, whatever it is, unhealthy relationship patterns. It's normal to find different ways to cope with these feelings because we never deal with the root issue. We never deal with what is making us feel that specific way, what is leading us to that alternative way of coping. So that is such a key concept we touch on in this interview. And there are so many other areas we touched on too, like speaking up, for example. It's so hard to be the one to kind of break that generational pattern or break that specific pattern in a relationship or a friend group or whatever it is. But, we all have a responsibility to be our best selves. Something like locker room talk, for example, and it's obviously so different all the time. I don't assume that it's always the same in any way. But for example, locker room talk can be very negative and unhealthy and degrading towards women, towards other people. And so if there is a boy who hears his friends putting down another woman or calling another boy a wussy for having feelings or talking about his feelings, are they going to speak up or are they going to go along with it? It can be hard, but to be that chain reaction and to be the one to say, hey, that's not cool, or hey, you know what? I think it's actually really important to talk about your feelings, and it's a healthy, brave thing to do, if anything. That can cause a chain reaction. That can cause someone else to say, he's right, I feel that way too, and I'm not going to keep making fun of that person. I'm not going to be degrading. I'm going to embrace my feelings and appreciate every emotion. That's just another example, not just for men either, for women too. Wherever you are, if you really believe in something and you feel like you want to speak up, it may be hard, but you can make a difference. Other people may be feeling the same way, but no one else may be speaking up on it. And that's kind of how I felt with when starting this podcast. Like, I feel like everyone around me tried to seem like they had it all figured out and they knew what they were doing, and their lives are perfect and post-grad is great, we're all good. But I think we're all lost in some way, and that's okay. Like, I have no idea where I'm going to be in 5 years. I don't know what my exact career is and what I'm going to be doing. I have ideas, I have dreams, I have hopes, I have a vision, but life is so unpredictable, life is so different, and I don't know what's going to happen. So whenever things change, whenever I'm put in different situations, I try to understand my emotions, to embrace that, to think, how am I feeling and how can I move forward with how I'm feeling? And so understanding your emotions, appreciating every emotion and coping with them in healthy ways is key. So overall, I think that was a major takeaway from this interview with Philip. He specifically explained how important it is to appreciate every emotion, because there are beautiful things that come from pain. We try to push it down. We try to avoid when we feel discomfort or when we feel in pain or embarrassed or feel rejected or feel like we failed. Those are the moments that can push us higher than we ever imagined. It's so possible. We just have to be okay with feeling that pain. And of course, to talk to someone and to work with a professional, of course. But overall, to embrace the feeling of pain and to understand that there's nothing wrong with you for being upset, for feeling depressed, for having these emotions. We're all human. There's some people you see in your life who may seem like they have it all figured out or they're fine. They may be struggling with depression, anxiety. You have no idea what they're going through. And so deeply admire Philip for being that example and saying, this is also what mental health looks like. It's not just someone you see on the street. Everyone struggles with mental health. Your friend who may seem like the happiest friend in the world may be struggling. And so we just never know. And so for people like Philip to be an example and say, hey, this is how I feel, and other people who may look like me, who may live in the same way I do, they may not feel like they're represented in this community. And to even say, hey, I struggle with mental health. I may not look like the exact poster child for mental health, but I struggle with it as well. We all have a specific idea in our heads, but he struggles with it as well. Everyone does. Mental health does not discriminate, and everyone deals with it. Whatever your gender is, your sexuality, whatever background you're from, it does not discriminate, and you're not alone. And so I'm so appreciative of Philip for being such an incredible advocate for mental health and for really making a difference. And so if you want to learn more about Philip, you can follow him on Instagram at @Phil_Quadify. And you can also visit the website of his company, QuadifyLLC.net. And you can find some services on there, and you can learn more about how to work with Philip, how to work with their team, and all that information will be in the description of this episode, along with his TEDx talk, which personally made me very emotional and just feel so thankful for what he does and the message that he shares. You can also follow me at tara.mont on Instagram, or the Instagram for the podcast at Trust and Thrive, where I post a lot of quotes, videos, updates on the show, so feel free to follow that account so you stay updated. And make sure to subscribe if you haven't so you don't miss an episode. And I hope you've been enjoying these. Please let me know if there are topics, guests you'd like to hear on the show. I'm so open to suggestions, and I feel like we've started the second year of the show off really strong. So thank you for listening. Thank you for being a part of this journey, and I will catch you all next Thrive Thursday.